We'll hear argument now in the case of Lowe against Gonzalez. Ms. Bien.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The BIA's decision that Mr. Lowe failed as a matter of law to establish his eligibility for asylum, withholding removal, and relief under the Torture Convention is not supported by the evidence on the record when considered as a whole. The BIA ignored the evidence that the attacks against Mr. Lowe and his family were based on the family's ethnicity and focused solely on one fact, that Mr. Lowe had tried to collect debts owed to the family, and concluded that Mr. Lowe and his family were attacked because Mr. Lowe is an overzealous shopkeeper. But Mr. Lowe's testimony, which was deemed credible and accepted as true by the BIA, does not support this overzealous shopkeeper theory. Mr. Lowe testified that his family was the only Wolof family in Wasadu, that they were identified as Wolof, that they had Wolof names, and that they spoke Wolof. Mr. Lowe testified regarding the fact that his family was targeted and attacked by members of the local tribes on several occasions because of their Wolof ethnicity. Mr. Lowe also testified regarding attacks against the family that occurred before Mr. Lowe had begun collecting the debt. In addition, there are numerous reports on the record from the State Department and Amnesty International documenting human rights abuses against those of Wolof ethnicity in the Casamance region. This evidence on the record, which this court gets to review de novo, compels the finding that Mr. Lowe has established either...
What are we reviewing de novo?
We're asking
the question whether substantial evidence supports the administrative decision. How does that get de novo?
The issue in this case is the BIA's determination that Mr. Lowe failed as a matter of law to establish his eligibility for the relief that he seeks in this case. At most, Your Honors, evidence of attacks both before and after the Mr. Lowe began collecting debts suggests that the persecutors may have had a mixed motive for attacking the Lowe family. This mixed motive theory under Moadine and Gerasi makes clear that an applicant's claim for asylum is not defeated simply because his persecutors had more than one motive, so long as at least one of the motives was on account of one of the protected grounds.
Counsel, I thought the record reflects that Mr. Lowe himself was never attacked, that while he was absent away at school in Morocco, that his family was targeted.
Actually,
there is no evidence that he himself was targeted.
Actually, that's not entirely true, Your Honor. In 1994, his family was attacked where there were 50 members of the local tribes. They held a riot at the Lowe family house. The local tribesmen had knives, bats, rifles is what Mr. Lowe testified to, and he was there. This was before he left to go to Morocco. In addition, Mr. Lowe was in Senegal when the four ethnic leaders, the four tribal leaders who he identified on the record, were threatening to kill him, and Mr. Lowe escaped the country before they could carry through with their threats.
His family has now relocated to another part of the country where their ethnicity is the majority? Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor. But the evidence on the record shows that there is still a threat out there. Mr. Lowe testified at the hearing, and his testimony was accepted as credible and true, that his father was just recently warned in 2003, warned to be careful to protect his family, and that those leaders, tribal leaders in the south of Casamance, were still plotting against him. In addition, Mr. Lowe testified, in quite some detail, about the political ties that these ethnic leaders have all across the country. Mr. Lowe testified to the IJ's questions, that this isn't simply a case where I could go and disappear among the Wolofs. This is different. His family is identified and targeted and would not be safe anywhere.
His family, in fact, has been safe in the north. Have they not, for quite some time?
There haven't been any physical attacks against the family, although I mentioned that they have been threatened. In addition, Mr. Lowe explained on the record that his father is quite elderly and infirm, and basically housebound. So he's not out and about. He's no longer a visible presence. So you wouldn't expect him to be attacked again. But Mr. Lowe, as now the leader of the Lowe family, would be the one that would bear the brunt of the attacks.
And it's been, they moved north, was that in 2001? So it's actually been several years.
Yes, this hearing in this case was held in 2003. And in 2003, that's where the record stops. And that's where Mr. Lowe explained that in 2003 is when the family had again been threatened. Again, he testified regarding the father's situation. On this point, I would like to point out that Mr. Lowe tried to produce additional corroborating evidence on this point and on all of the other points in his case. He submitted a motion well in advance of the hearing to have his father testify by telephone. The IJ denied this motion outright. Mr. Lowe's father, I mean, this isn't any witness that we're talking about here. This was the witness. And aside from Mr. Lowe, would be the one that could provide the most important, relevant, and material evidence to the issues that the court is speaking of here, not only what happened to the family, but also what was the current situation in Senegal. Under the Nyam versus Ashcroft case, it's error for the BIA to deny Mr. Lowe the opportunity to provide the evidence. As I mentioned, the BIA deemed Mr. Lowe's testimony credible and assumed it to be true. Just a month ago, this court in Gerezi versus Gonzalez once again said the general rule in immigration cases is that an asylum applicant whose testimony is otherwise credible need not produce corroborating evidence to support each and every element of his claim. This is especially true in cases like this, where the asylum claim hinges on specific incidents personally involving the applicant and his family, which are not easily subject to verification. In any event, the BIA may not deny a claim based on a lack of corroborating evidence where it is not reasonable to believe that such corroboration exists or is reasonably accessible or available. As I already mentioned, Mr. Lowe was actually prevented from providing additional corroborating evidence. But this is not a case where corroborating evidence was completely absent. As I've already mentioned, the record contained numerous reports from the State Department and Amnesty International documenting the country conditions in Senegal, specifically noting that rebel groups in Casamance have been responsible for serious human rights abuses and have particularly targeted the Wolofs, and that these abuses are committed as a larger part of a larger political conflict which pits the Wolofs against the rest of the ethnic groups in Senegal. Neither the BIA, the IJ, or the government has attempted to discredit or distinguish these reports in any way. In fact, the record is essentially, other than acknowledging that they exist, it's all but silent and doesn't appear to have been factored into the BIA's or the IJ's analysis at all. There is no finding on this record that Mr. Lowe failed to provide any additional corroborating evidence that was reasonably available or accessible to him. As I've mentioned, he wasn't able to produce the testimony of his father, and his claim is based largely on personal events that happened to Mr. Lowe, so it's not reasonable to expect that there would be independent verification of these particular events that form the basis of his claim. Moreover, Mr. Lowe cannot be expected to provide the corroborating evidence that the government here argues is so essential in this case, namely the corroboration from Mr. Lowe's persecutors as to exactly what their reason was in attacking the family. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve my remaining time.
Certainly, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Nichols.
Your Honor, may it please the Court, Carl Nichols from the Department of Justice on behalf of the respondent. There are two independent reasons this Court should deny the petitioner for review. The first is, even assuming Mr. Lowe's testimony was credible, there is no evidence in the record that Mr. Lowe personally suffered any event that would rise to the level of persecution. Even the 1994 event that counsel mentioned in her argument is an event that was nothing more than a threat. And nothing that has ever happened to Mr. Lowe is anything more than a threat. And I'll run you very quickly through what Mr. Lowe testified about that he personally suffered. In 1994, there was this rally where his family and he was and Mr. Lowe was threatened. In 1998, after he returned to collect the debts for his family, he was again threatened. In 1997, when he attempted to have a sheep worked on by a vet, the vet declined to do so. 1999. Apparently there was another rally, although the record is a little bit unclear about whether that rally is the same as the one in 1998. And finally, in 1999, a doctor refused, apparently, to treat his father. Now, none of those events that occurred to Mr. Lowe personally rise to the level of persecution under this court's precedence. In Dandan, or Dandan, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, this court held that the petitioner had not suffered past persecution, even though he'd been detained for at least 3 days, had been beaten, and his face was swollen as a result. Nothing approaching that has ever occurred to Mr. Lowe. In Caprick, or Caprick, another court, the petitioner was held. This court held in another case that the petitioner had been held for a week without adequate food and water and had also suffered threats. And in Sofinet, the petitioner had suffered at least 5 detentions of approximately 3 days. In all three of those cases, this court held the petitioner had not established that he had been subject to persecution. The government respectfully submits that in this case, what happened to Mr. Lowe personally does not rise to the level of persecution. There is a second independent ground on which this court should deny, particularly with the standard of review that the court applies here, which is that you will reverse only if a reasonable fact finder must have been compelled to conclude that the petitioner had established both persecution and, with respect to this other element, that the persecution was on account of a protected status. Here, there is absolutely no evidence in the record other than Mr. Lowe's opinion that what happened to him was as a result of his being a Wolof. That is the only evidence in the record on this fact, is his own opinion. In other cases where this court has said that the petitioner had established the on account of prong,
doesn't the State Department country report suggest that there is inter-ethnic violence in the southern part of Senegal, the Casamance region?
The State Department report, Your Honor, is it depends on how one reads it, and I'd like to quote, if I could, the portion that the petitioner relies upon. It says the following, and this is at Administrative Record 353. Resentment on the part of the Casamance groups, including the Diol, of domination by Northerners, including the Wolof, reportedly has contributed significantly to the secessionist MFDC rebellion in the Casamance region, which began in 1992 and has continued to give rise to many human rights abuses. There are a few points that I'd like to make with respect to that. One, I don't believe that anywhere in the State Department reports that are in the record, and in addition any that are post-record, say that the MFDC was targeting Wolof citizens specifically. That's point one. The second is that the MFDC is a secretive group, and there is, again, no record evidence that the people who threatened Mr. Lowe were members of the MFDC. What we really have here, and it's essentially conceded by the petitioner, if I could, I'd like to run through some of his own testimony, that what happened here was as a result of his decision to return. Remember, he returned in 1997 after his family had, as he testified, had money stolen and his father had apparently been beaten. That's in January 1997. He returns at the end of 1997, notwithstanding the fact that this had occurred to his family. And what does he do? The first thing he decides to do is he stops lending people food and he attempts to call people's debt. And what he said in his asylum application is, the people began to view him, quote, as a threat to their interest because they say I'm preventing them from eating and growing their crop, and they hate me collecting the debt. They came by hundreds asking for food, merchandise, or money by force. The problem began in 1998. They accused me of starving them. This was how the debt built up. Finally, they thought it was their right to get food from my father and never pay back. They never imagined that somebody dared stand up against it. No reasonable fact finder would have been compelled to determine on this record that Mr. Lowe was targeted because he is a Wolof, as opposed to the fact that he decided to come back and collect his family's debts. Now, one last thing, Your Honor, and that is with respect to this telephone hearing. It is the case that petitioner filed a motion to permit a telephone hearing. That was on June 2nd of 2003 before the hearing. That motion was denied as well 14 days later. But at a July 29th, 2003 hearing, and this is at Administrative Record 129, the IJ suggested that although he generally does not permit telephonic hearings, quote, and if I could find the quote quickly, I will give it to you. What we do is we permit you to make an offer of proof as to what the witness will testify to. Now, petitioner never took the IJ up on that suggestion. There's no offer of proof given at the hearing itself. Petitioner never pressed at the hearing to permit his father to testify. And there's certainly no proffer about what petitioner's father would testify to. And in that respect, this case is substantially different from Nyam. And actually, it's the Blagojev part of Nyam, where what had happened was the petitioner there had proffered an expert, along with an affidavit about what the expert was going to testify to. The IJ said, sure, that expert can testify by telephone from Hanover, New Hampshire. Well, the expert ended up being in Prague when the hearing was held, and Judge Posner's reaction to that was, if you have agreed to have telephonic testimony from a witness, an expert whose testimony is crucial and who has proffered an affidavit, and you're willing to do it from Hanover, we can't see any reason why you wouldn't do it from Prague. This is simply not that case. We have no proffer. The IJ requested it, in essence. The petitioner never gave it to the IJ. There was no error in not holding a telephonic testimony or conducting testimony here by telephone. If the court has no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further?
Following up on counsel's last argument regarding the telephonic testimony, there was an offer of proof that's in the record, and actually the IJ notes in his opinion itself that there is an affidavit from Mr. Lowe's father that was submitted to the record. The point, however, and I don't disagree that this case is different from Nyam, because Nyam dealt with an expert, and you had an expert who was going to testify generally to country conditions. This was not an expert witness. This was someone that was going to testify, who was present at the attacks on the family. He was there. He was an eyewitness, and he could testify not only to what happened to the family, but what the current country conditions were at that point. That's what distinguishes this case from Nyam and what makes the IJ's error in this case so much more critical and essential. Again, we're back to the debt collecting, and there's still no explanation as to why Mr. Lowe's family would have been attacked prior to the time that he was collecting the debts, if that was the sole motivation of his persecutors. There's still no addressing of the mixed motive analysis that an asylum applicant does not need to prove that there is only one motive or does not need to disprove a motive. The evidence on the record supports the fact that Mr. Lowe and his family were targeted at least in part by their ethnicity, their Wolof ethnicity. The State Department reports, even the point that counsel quoted, I obviously didn't draft the language of the State Department report, so I can't, to make it any clearer, but if you read it, it says that there are human rights abuses committed in Senegal because of ethnicity, ethnic tensions. I don't know how to make
only
it any
so far as the State Department is reporting in the southern region. But, of course, the view of the United States is that if you can live in any part, if you can live in safety in any part of your native country, you must. And that was the point of my colleague's question about, isn't the rest of the family now living in safety in the north?
And I've explained, Your Honor, I believe that the evidence on, I'm sorry, I see my time is up, if I could just finish.
Please.
The evidence on the record, Mr. Lowe's testimony, which was deemed credible and accepted as true, is that the family is not safe. Again, we go back to the motion to deny telephonic testimony. Maybe we wouldn't have to guess on this issue if the father had, in fact, been able to testify. There's no substitute, as affidavit isn't a substitute for live testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.